Now it's time for us to look at a report that Aaron put together this past week. On January 19th, 2017, financial markets and economies throughout the world are going to enter into uncharted and unprecedented phase of history when reality TV star and personal brand marketer Donald Trump is sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. Now, Trump made a plethora of promises throughout his campaign, which covered government corruption, immigration, military infrastructure, and the repayment of government debt, and even civil rights. Many of the changes promised by the new administration border on extreme, while others cross that line entirely. For this reason, investors and experts are clamoring to determine what impact a Trump presidency will have on the markets and the global economics and global economy in general. Now, Aaron has put together this report. It's a summary of some of the key economic topics that the president-elect plans to address during the first 100 days in office. So what was the impetus kind of behind this report, Aaron?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now with Donald Trump's election. It was a huge surprise to a lot of people, and he made some extremely strong statements about what he planned to do with the U.S. economy in certain areas. And all of these things are going to have an impact on economic growth, on both in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., and also on the stock markets and investment returns. So what we wanted to do is just really take a look at what he said he wants to achieve over the first 100 days in office, you know, what's some of the big policy initiatives are, and then just make an assessment as to what the potential impacts can be on the global economy and the stock market. So within that, we've broken his policy initiatives down into seven different individual initiatives, so to speak. And what we've seen is certainly there's some areas where we're quite wary and a little fearful about some of his policy initiatives, and there's some areas where there's certainly some short term, potentially longer opportunities for investors as well. So that's essentially what we're doing, is just looking at what his plans are, at least according to his campaign, and you know, how investors can best position themselves over the next 6 months and beyond.
Excellent. Now, why don't we start with your thoughts in regards to international trade? Donald made a number of pronouncements in this area. So why don't you give us your thoughts on how some of those pronouncements and some of what are going to be his policies going forward, or could be his policies going forward, will affect the markets and the economy in general?
Sure. So first, before I even get into that, I want to just start with the caveat that politicians often make some pretty strong promises during campaign periods, and often the end result is watered down or even just completely ignored after they enter office. So although Donald Trump has made a lot of really strong statements, we can't just assume that he's going to pursue these policies as aggressively as he said he would during the campaign. As well, most of these policies are going to require support from Congress, and he's only going to be able to pursue them to the extent that he has that support. So even though he's made some pretty strong statements in certain areas, I think that right now we also have to take a bit of a wait and see approach and take what he said in the past with a grain of salt, because in a lot of cases, the initiatives that he wants to take are clearly outside the powers of the office of the president. So he will need support beyond just himself and his inner circle to do these things. But so international trade, you asked about international trade. So this is really the big one. This is where we see the most risk in his policies. He's taken a very protectionist stance. So he has come out as being anti-globalization. He thinks that globalization has cost American workers jobs, with companies outsourcing production, manufacturing operations overseas, and then selling into the U.S. market. So there's a number of things that he wants to do here. He wants to renegotiate NAFTA. He wants to eliminate the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He wants to label China as a currency manipulator, impose significantly higher tariffs on companies that produce products outside of the U.S., and he also wants to empower his regulatory officials to use whatever legal options they have to crack down on companies that he thinks are abusing the current trade laws. So when you look at something like this, it's really uncertain how far he's going to be able to take these policies. The United States is it's the economy is based on trade. So just to start throwing up a ton of trade barriers all of a sudden and attacking your trading partners is not what we think. We don't believe that that is going to result in strong economic growth and jobs for the country. And we're hoping that his administration figures that out as well. There's certainly changes he can make, smaller changes that could potentially result in a stronger job market in the United States. But if he starts erecting trade barriers with other countries, then those countries are going to respond in kind. They're going to erect trade barriers with the United States. And when that happens, basically what you have is a trade war. So how are companies that are international companies, national companies in the United States, they're gonna lose their access to international markets as well. So this is an area that that we're hoping he's going to really soften on as he kind of looks at the numbers and makes some decisions here. And he's also in many cases, I believe, gonna have to have the support of Congress to enact some of these policies. You know, NAFTA, obviously that's of particular importance to Canada. He wants to renegotiate or eliminate NAFTA. For the most part, he's been singling out Mexico and not Canada, but I'm sure that somehow Canada is going to get caught in that as well. It's really too early to tell what that's going to look like, and we advise people not to panic, but we also have to keep in mind that, you know, NAFTA has actually been amended several times since it was first brought into force in 1996. So going back to the table and making a few changes is not necessarily going to be a horrible thing for the Canadian economy. I'd also like to point out that while the United States is our largest consumer of goods, we are actually the largest consumer of goods that the United States sells as well. So we do, obviously, we are more dependent on them than they are on us, but we are still their largest customer. So we're optimistic that whatever these changes are, they're not going to be disastrous to the Canadian economy.
Okay. And I was looking through your report, and I think you also make an excellent point in there about the protection of blue collar workers through protectionist trade practices. Really, this doesn't address the loss of jobs through industrial automation, which I know both myself and you consider to be even a bigger issue than globalization over the next decade.
It is going to be a bigger issue, and I think that it's even starting to become a bigger issue now. So if you create a situation where you're forcing U.S. companies to bring production back into the United States, then you're basically incentivizing them to speed up the automation of their facilities anyway. So I don't think that long term that's gonna be a solution to their problem. I think that it's actually gonna cause more problems economically for them and potentially even more job loss over the long term. We've got all sorts of technologies coming down the line, like driverless cars, that are gonna displace workers. And the solution, in my opinion, is to help retrain them to find more work. If you take the solution of just stifling technological development, then other countries are going to embrace that. And the United States in the next few decades will then be the future's developing nation, and somebody else will be the technological superpower. But
yeah,
there's another reason. I think that we just have to see what happens with his policies and take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we agree that educating the workforce rather than putting up walls is a better solution long term. But you know, it takes a long term vision, not a short term vision, when you're talking about educating.
True.
Now let's get to your thoughts on Trump's stated tax agenda. How will this affect the markets and the economy generally?
Okay, so he's planning major tax cuts pretty much right across the board. His plan is to grow the U.S. economy by 4% a year, create at least 25 million new jobs. So under this plan, a middle-class family with two children would get a 35% tax cut. The number of brackets would be reduced from 7 to 3. The corporate tax rate would be lowered from 35% to 15%. And corporate cash balances stored in overseas jurisdictions could be repatriated to the United States at a tax rate of 10% compared to the full tax rate of 35%. So another thing he wants to do is simplify the tax code, which that would be great. I mean, good luck with that. I don't know if that's going to be successful. That would rely pretty much completely on Congress, all of these tax initiatives. However, I believe that the Republicans would support the tax cuts, at least for corporations. This is something that is a potential short-term opportunity, but also a potential long-term risk. These are pretty heavy tax cuts. So if he does this, that's going to mean in the short term more money in the pockets of individuals, higher corporate earnings. So that should be good for consumer spending. That should be good for the stock market, for short-term economic growth. The problem, of course, is that we have to go back to the United States, their massive debt, almost $18 trillion national government debt. Right now, they've got a deficit of about $500 billion. It's been growing recently. They've done a great job of reducing their deficit from the $1.4 trillion that it peaked at in 2009. But if they start heading back up in that direction, then we're going to have a lot of risk and uncertainty reinjected back into the system. And this can have the opposite effect of this can essentially cause businesses and consumers to not spend because they're uncertain of the economic future of the United States. So while we support an efficient tax system, we support, you know, as much as reasonably possible, keeping as much cash in the hands of individuals and a system that incentivizes business growth, just making massive tax cuts at the same time that you're planning massive spending increases, I think is potentially a long-term risk. It's another thing that we'll have to see how that turns out. One thing that we support wholeheartedly is the 10% tax on the repatriation of capital of corporate cash balances back into the United States. There's estimates put the amount of cash that U.S. corporations hold overseas at over $2 trillion, between about $2 trillion to $2.5 trillion. And companies, this is money earned overseas, so it has not been taxed yet inside of the United States. And they cannot bring it back into the United States. They cannot invest that capital into America, or they cannot pay it out to their shareholders in dividends unless they incur the full tax rate. So corporations are just hoarding these massive cash balances overseas since they don't want to lose 35% of it by bringing it back into the United States. It's not doing any good to the economy sitting overseas. I 100% support. I think it's long overdue to give them a tax break to bring that capital back. And then that opens up the possibility that there could be a massive reinvestment of capital into the U.S. economy, as well as payment of dividends to shareholders with that money. So I think that is a good policy.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting on your last point there to see how the repatriation, how many companies take advantage of that if it is in fact enacted, and the effect that has on the stock market, whether dividends are increased, whether it increases investment within the U.S. economy. It may be a policy that actually could work. Now let's talk about immigration. This is a hot button issue for sure. Donald Trump has made a number of statements in this regard. Your quick thoughts here.
Yeah, I think that immigration was one of the policies that got him elected, somewhat surprising to some people. So basically, he wants to crack down on illegal immigration. So one of the things he wants to do is build a massive wall between the United States and Mexico. He also wants to round up and deport the unauthorized immigrants, illegal immigrants that currently reside in the United States. So he puts that number, some of the numbers that I've seen, I don't know exactly how he defines an illegal immigrant. He puts the number at 2 to 3 million. The research I've done puts the number more at 11 million. So bottom line, between the building this massive wall, I know he says that Mexico will pay for it. We'll see about that. But between building the wall, where estimates put the cost of that at upwards of $25 billion. But then also the bigger cost is going to be, you know, putting together a task force to investigate, round up, detain, deport, you know, up to 11 million people. That's going to be a massive expense. It's going to cause a lot of friction between the federal government and certain cities known as sanctuary cities, certain states. There's going to be some costly battles. The bottom line is, I think that this is just going to cost a lot of money, and I don't think it's going to add any economic value to the United States. In fact, I think the bigger potential is that it will probably disrupt local labor markets and local economies and just end up costing a lot of money.
I'd have to agree with you on that. Now, energy, this is a big issue for particularly for Canadian investors. Western Canadian investors, Western Canadians in general. How do you believe Trump's policies and going forward are going to affect the energy markets generally in North America?
Well, if you're an energy producer or if you're in the energy sector in the United States, then Trump win should be a big net positive for you. He basically wants to completely, from what I've read, completely deregulate that industry and remove any barriers to the development of U.S. energy resources. He also wants to approve any type of critical infrastructure project, such as the Keystone XL pipeline that would run from Alberta down to the United States and provide Canadian oil and gas producers with greater access to the U.S. market, but also access to potentially to international markets through the Gulf of Mexico. So generally that's a net positive for the energy industry overall. Really though, what this does is this deals with the supply side of the economics. It doesn't deal with the demand side. You still have pretty stagnant growth internationally. You have OPEC that would probably reduce production if the United States got more competitive, because there's been some wars over that over the past couple of years, where, you know, when the United States was developing its unconventional oil and gas resources and increasing production and putting a damper on the price, then countries like Saudi Arabia supported basically more production to lower the price and make the United States less competitive. So there's a possibility of that. The bottom line is that this is good for energy producers because it removes the barriers, but it's not for there to be a stable pricing environment. We need to see more demand in the market, and this doesn't really touch on the demand issue. Now, for Canadian producers, somewhat of a different story. So approval of the Keystone XL would be a net positive to the Canadian energy market. But what I think the bigger issue is just the difference between the regulatory environment in the United States and Canada. So in Canada, we have an NDP government. In Alberta, we have a Liberal government federally. And the regulations, the environmental regulations and barriers for our energy market, they just keep increasing. There's a proposed carbon tax, which would be another large expense for the energy sector. So the regulatory environment up here in Canada is getting more complicated, more expensive. Whereas in the United States, Donald Trump wants to remove all these obstructions, and certainly a carbon tax is not even close on the table for him. So I see a big disparity between the competitiveness of the market in Canada and the United States. We don't have access to international markets outside of the United States. The United States is about 99% of our export market. So it makes me wonder how Canadian producers are going to be able to compete in that situation.
Yeah, it is an interesting scenario that you've got there. A positive in terms of regulation in the U.S. We have more stringent regulation in Canada. Now, is this, and in terms of just the prices of energy going forward, if you're reducing regulation to increase production, increase work in this industry generally, in a weak global growth environment, does this put a ceiling on energy prices or even put pressure on them? And so you have an environment that's friendly to that sector, but with lower prices, that's not friendly to profits or cash flow in this segment. So you may have a scenario where, you know, companies have a friendly environment, but they're not producing the cash flow necessary to really push prices of these stocks higher.
Yeah, and exactly. And given the situation that we're looking at right now, the Canadian energy space is not something, in terms of oil and gas, is not something that I would be investing in. I'd be a little wary of that sector right now for those reasons.
It's definitely a concern for us right now, and we don't have much exposure there generally. Now we're going to move on to infrastructure and military spending. There's a ton of promises made here, kind of light on the substance in terms of those promises. But your take on Trump's promises in this segment.
Okay, so he's promised a major investment into rebuilding infrastructure in the U.S. So specifically, he says he wants to leverage public-private partnerships and private investments through tax incentives. And he's looking at $1 trillion in infrastructure investment over the next 10 years. He also says that he wants to rebuild the U.S. military and eliminate the defense sequester and expand military investment. No, on the military, no specific amounts were provided. So at least in the short term, once again, infrastructure and military spending is going to add fiscal stimulus to the U.S. economy, and that's going to bolster certain industries, increase corporate earnings, and create jobs, at least in the short term. But we're going back now to the deficit issues. So Donald Trump wants to drastically reduce taxes, yet at the same time he wants to increase spending, and you already have a major problem with the U.S. debt that they've, once again, they've dealt with well over the past 3, 4, 5 years. But if they start moving back in that direction, then you're going to have concerns once again about global stability. If you have more risk injected into the system in that respect, then that's going to make it hard to convince businesses to invest capital into infrastructure, because they want to make sure that they're going to get a return on that investment. And that's going to be regardless of what the tax rate is. So I think it's going to be, it may be difficult for Trump to convince private industry to foot a lot of the bill for that. I think it might be more of a dream than a reality, but we'll see what happens. And with military spending, of course, that's just purely government expense. So that's just going to, more military spending is just going to, it's just going to come out of the deficit.
Yeah. And we have been looking at companies that could be potentially affected by a spending increase in this segment, but again, the company
certainly there's definitely opportunities there, and that's what we were saying as well. At least in the short term, there's big opportunities, because there's going to be companies that are not even necessarily servicing the military directly, but possibly servicing companies that service the military or service regions that have large companies that service the military. So there's going to be opportunities,
ancillary opportunities. We find those through our research all the time, and there's some companies that we're looking at right now. We have to stress that they have to be standing on their 2 feet already. They have to be trading probably at reasonable valuations as it stands right now. And then the upside is if you see a pickup in infrastructure and military spending, they could benefit from that. Now let's move on to the regulatory environment. Your thoughts here?
So his policy is smaller government, deregulate the industries. So what his plan is to, for every new proposed federal regulation, they would have to eliminate two existing regulations. Right now, in terms of this policy, it's really impossible to see how it's going to work out, because we haven't seen it in action yet, and it's really all about the execution. We're against unnecessary regulation, and we're against red tape that's a hindrance to economic development. But with that being said, we do think that this particular proposal it seems quite arbitrary. There isn't any criteria that's provided to determine which types of regulations would be removed. And we also have to remind ourselves, although we don't want an environment that's overly regulated, regulations do exist for a reason. They may lower the burden on companies and result in short-term growth and activity over the short term, of course, but long-term, mid-term consequences could be disastrous. And a good example of that is the 2008 financial crisis, and that originated a large part from the unregulated credit markets in the United States. In Canada, we had a much higher level of regulation in our banking industry and our credit markets, and that's one of the main reasons why we were able to escape a lot of the problems that the United States had.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the pendulum may have swung too far one way and too far the other way at times, but in terms of our regulation in the Canadian market, saved us from going into a credit tight crisis that we saw in the U.S. And that is one sector that needs, has proven that they need, and it needs regulation. And taking a kind of an arbitrary policy into that sector would be, I would tread very lightly there. So do you have any conclusions or any final words you want to put on the commentary that you put together?
Sure. Just a reminder again that right now it's nobody knows exactly what policies are going to be enacted and what the impacts are going to be, how aggressively they're going to be pursued. So we just have to remember that a lot of what he plans to do is going to require the support of Congress, and we just don't know. So right now, we think that our best advice to investors is just not to panic. Don't necessarily hold off on buying stocks or buying stocks in the U.S. However, we do see potential for a lot of volatility in the future over the course of the next year and perhaps throughout Trump's presidency for a number of reasons. And when we're looking at volatile, uncertain markets, what we have generally advised our investors to do is to keep a portion of their investment capital outside of the market, just ready to pounce on opportunities in case of volatility or some type of a market correction. So that's what we're doing right now, just advising people to remain calm, you know, look at some of the opportunities here. If we do see volatility throughout at least the first 6 months, perhaps, of Trump's term, I think that that's going to be an opportunity. And that's really what we're focusing on is, you know, using that volatility as an opportunity to purchase high quality companies at better prices, and then to hold those companies over the course of a few years.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of funny, at least anecdotally, we had a chat right before election day. Basically, we had two companies that we'd done extensive research on that we were just going to release in our US coverage. And we had considered potentially pulling back and not releasing those reports until we saw the result of the election. But, you know, we're so company specific focused in our research that, you know, we decided, you know, these are good companies, really, regardless of whether it's a Clinton or a Trump presidency. So, you know, we issued those recommendations really a day before the election. And, you know, again, at this point, we're happy we did so. One of the recommendations, both the recommendations are up already. One of them is up just under 30% in the past couple of weeks. So, you know, you can still find good companies, market uncertainty or not. And that's kind of when you're focusing really company specific. We want to stress that there's going to be volatility and uncertainty. There's going to be opportunity. We just got to be nimble and take advantage of that.